Hello folks, I'm Tom Bajur. I'm the host of Strong Tower Radio Feature. We are today at the Holland Museum here in Holland, Michigan. We have the director and part of the staff, and we're just going to have a wonderful time. The Holland Museum is a local regional destination, but I think it's a world destination too, and you're going to learn more about it. My co-host today is the director of the museum, Ricky Levine. Welcome, Ricky.
Thank you. Great to be here.
We're going to have a fun time. Would you introduce the two other people who will be helping us with this interview?
I'd be delighted to. Michelle Stempien is our Education and Community Programs Manager, and Deb Wake is our Volunteer and Education Coordinator.
All right. We're going to have a fun time, but we always start with a word of prayer. Our great Heavenly Father, we just want to thank you for the opportunity to virtually visit part of our history. It's our history because we're a part of a community here in West Michigan, but we're a community across the state and a part around the world. We're all connected together. And so when we understand each other's history, we understand ourselves better. And so be with us on this virtual tour. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, Ricky, tell us a little bit about the Holland Museum. Where does a museum fit in a virtual world?
Well, that's a really interesting question. How does it fit in a virtual world? I think we tell stories. That's what museums do. Okay. We educate. So even if you're not physically in the space, you can learn the stories about people or art or artifacts of all kinds, and you can visualize them as we talk about them.
Absolutely, and I really love that. One thing about museums is that in-person experience, but as soon as I say that, I'm sure that 2019, 2020 had changed the way you do business. How did COVID, and one of these days we're gonna have to forget COVID, right?
Yes, move on.
We'll have to move on, but what did COVID teach you as an in-person, physical, 3D space? What did the COVID experience teach you two or three years out?
Well, it taught us a lot, but it really taught us about different ways to connect with people. And it also taught us about the limitations some people have in connecting. You know, we isolate people if they don't have some technology at certain times. And so we had to be very cognizant of that. We knew we had to pick up the phone and talk to people. We knew we had to write letters and newsletters so that the people that couldn't access our physical space were still connected with the museum on some level.
Well, Ricky Levine, thank you so much for bringing us that perspective. Let's start the tour. Ricky, where do we start?
We start right here in the lobby of the museum.
Listeners, do you hear a little bit of an echo? Why is there such an echo in this?
Well, the echo is because of the building itself. It's a 1914 former federal post office, and that is where the museum resides. But Tom, if you would indulge me for a minute.
Please.
We start all of our programs with a land acknowledgement statement, and I'd love to share that with your listeners.
What is that?
Land acknowledgement acknowledges those that have been here even before the European immigrant,
sure.
Those that inhabited this land prior to us. So our land acknowledgement is that Holland area surrounds Lake Makatawa, ancestrally known to the Potawatomi, Odawa, and Peoria nations as Mekatugami or Black Lake. Each nation has their own rich cultural traditions and beliefs that still survive today. We, the Holland Museum, acknowledge that this land is sacred, and we commit to honoring the land and the indigenous people who have stewarded it for generations through continuing education, partnerships, and self-reflection.
And that's a wonderful reminder, because we tend to be ethnocentric.
This is true. And this is one of the reasons that we have this acknowledgement statement. We've worked with some local indigenous people to create it, and we start all of our programs, and we welcome people in the lobby with it in Spanish as well as in English.
And that's important in this community, which traditionally thought to be Dutch, but we forgot the American Indians, but we also for the subsequents, including the Spanish, Hispanic culture.
Spanish, Asian, yes. There's quite a few communities of culture here, and that's one of our roles as a museum, is to tell everyone's story.
Let's talk about the history of this museum.
I'd love to.
Maybe even the history of this community.
Oh, well, that's longer than the time we have. But the museum was started in 1937, and it was started by Willard Wickers, And he actually was a Dutch immigrant. Actually, I think he's a descendant of Dutch immigrants. But he had been named previously as the director of the Michigan Historical Records Survey, which is a product of the Federal Works Progress Administration, or the WPA.
Which was in the late 20s
exactly,
and early 30s.
Exactly. So what he did was he started collecting materials related to the establishment of the Holland area by Dutch immigrants who arrived around 1847. So because of that, we have a rich, rich culture of Dutch artifacts and archival material that tell that story of those Dutch European immigrants that came here. The museum was housed for 53 years in a residential home right across Centennial Park, which is right outside our window.
And Centennial Park is a block wide, a city block wide, and long, and it's diagonally across the park here. A beautiful park where much of the tulip time activities take place.
Oh, much of it, but that's all over town too. But it was named Centennial Park not because of the history of the United States, but the history of Holland. And if you walk through the park, there are statues and there are other placards that kind of talk about different aspects of Holland. But the original museum was formerly a hospital, formerly a doctor's office, and now it's a B&B. So it was it's a beautiful residential home. But this building became available because the post office moved down the street, and the city of Holland actually purchased it for it to become the Holland Museum, and so we were able to move from that much more cramped location into this space.
All right, let's start walking through the exhibits. So museums tend to have two types of exhibits, Ricky, isn't that correct? They have permanent exhibits and they also have temporary exhibits.
Well, in our case, that's true. I think there are other museums that have different types of exhibits, but I think primarily you can talk about that in general terms. And we're walking right now into our history gallery.
Okay.
And this is a rich, rich gallery of history that shares the stories of Holland, Michigan. So, different than what I was talking about, the Dutch immigrant story, some of that is reflected here, but it's more about those that have made this community their own. And I'm gonna turn it over to Michelle to talk more specifically about this exhibit and the galleries here.
Yes, hi. So we have the area, it's sectioned off. We have a timeline in the back of the gallery, which really talks about the development of Holland starting from again, the indigenous people who were here first, and then stretching along the establishment of the Dutch immigrants and the development of the community up until the present day. And we are working very hard to continue to add to this display to, again, tell everyone's story and getting a little more contemporary. We also have areas sectioned off in the gallery devoted to agriculture. Furniture industry,
that
which is
huge.
Very important in West Michigan.
Explain how big the furniture is to those who made. I see a Herman Miller chair.
Well, there was so much lumber, of course, in Michigan. That was a big industry for us. So a lot of furniture companies developed in the Holland and Grand Rapids area. Luckily, we were able to maintain a couple of those businesses.
Then I see a piano. Does anything, the piano, why is this piano here?
It was from moved to Holland, the Bush and Lane Piano Company here in Holland. So we have a wonderful example of it in the gallery.
And you know, and that's
even. No one can play it though.
Oh, that's, well, you know, even in Grand Haven, we need to visit the Grand Haven Museum someday, and they had a piano factory also.
Yes. And then we also have a section devoted to tourism and.
Tourism? People come visit, but what is unique about Holland, and does it have a connection with Chicago?
Yes. Because it was so delayed to create the channel that connected Black Lake or Macatawa to Lake Michigan, we missed out on a lot of the commercial industry that Chicago received, but we ended up with the vacationers. So by 1900, there were 1,100 vessels that came through this channel and brought visitors, weekenders, vacationers to this area.
And that was before air conditioning, right?
Oh, for sure. So everyone, you know, from Chicago wanted to escape the heat, and they just took a nice boat ride across Lake Michigan to Holland, because there's no place better than here.
And actually out there at the lake by the channel and so on, there's a community of well, do you want to describe that?
Well, there were a lot of wealthy people that built cabins in this area or stayed at the luxury hotels that we had. Unfortunately, most of those burned down because they were made of wood. but that leads into the lighthouse.
There's a Fresnel. Is it Fresnel?
Yeah, Fresnel. And this is the fourth order light, which was the last light to shine, the last Fresnel lens to shine at Big Red.
Big Red,
what we call our lighthouse, right.
Now, right behind you, I see Alabama. We're in Michigan. What's that all about?
That's one of the ships that would deliver all of those vacationers to our town.
You know,
so these huge ships came through that channel.
And cruise ships.
Right, cruise ships. And they're going to start up again, I hear.
That's awesome.
Yes.
You know, actually, when I was a kid, my grandfather had a boat here at Holland, Lake Macatawa. Uh-huh. And back in that day, there were some cruise ships going around the lake and stopped in Holland.
Right.
It's good to see it again.
Yeah, and that's partially why Reverend Van Rolte chose this area, because he knew the power of, you know, if we could connect our little lake to the big lake, that would bring tourism and industry and so on. So it was very important, and he couldn't get the government to get on board. It took over 20 years after the Dutch arrived before the government finally helped us dig out the channel and construct the lighthouse.
And it opened up a whole new economics thing,
and
industry and such.
Correct.
What are we looking right here?
I wanted to show you this piano.
Okay,
well,
it's a whole lot older. It's only about 3 feet wide, and it's like a pump organ.
Yeah, it's very cool because it actually survived the great fire we had.
I know Chicago had a great fire.
Same time.
Same day. Yep.
Whoa.
Yep.
And it was a drought
connection?
In the Midwest.
No.
Ember flu.
That's a myth. That's
total myth. Yes.
Right.
Yeah, October 1871. The same weekend as the Chicago fire, there was a fire in Wisconsin, and there were three fires in Michigan, including Holland, and 80% of the town as it existed at that time burned.
Wow.
So the few items that Deb's pointing out here, the organ, and we have a dresser and some other items survived the fire.
Looks like there's a little char.
Yep, you can see where they're singed.
Yes. What they did was they actually buried a lot of the furniture and their possessions to protect it from the fire,
right,
because the fire was so rampant.
Wow.
Yes. So they would bury them at the beach, and we know that there were some items actually buried in Centennial Park right across from us. Some items, we have a clock.
Did they wrap it or something?
Yeah,
or
in carpets.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
To protect them, so.
Yeah, our volunteer fire department could not keep up with the fire.
I see an engine here. What's this all about?
We have a lot of industry, and even though Detroit is the auto capital, Holland does their share as well. So we have many companies, including Johnson Controls, and that were started in this area.
Even a Central Closet Company. It's a toilet. It's a wooden toilet.
Well, you need those.
You gotta build them somewhere.
Well, what else do we have along here?
Well, I wanted to point out the accordion.
The accordions, okay.
Yes. It was a man named Beltram. His father bought that accordion from a music shop in Holland. But him and two buddies played. Their band was called Ortega.
Okay.
And so they played a lot of Latin tunes in Chicago as well as Grand Rapids in the area. After World War II, for a couple decades before he retired from the Heinz. Heinz Pickles here in Holland
as
well.
Yes, yes. I used to smell that as you drove by.
Yes,
still
do.
Vinegar.
Still do.
Oh, really? I got to get back. What's this up here with all the things hanging? I'm not quite, it's a little kind of scary. Is this like a hair?
That is an example of a permanent wave machine that would have been used in the 1940s. And it actually came.
A little
scary. Yes, it is. It does look kind of like something from outer space.
It looks like you could get electrocuted really, really easy.
Yes, but yes, you would hook women up to that so they could get their permanent waves. And this came from a shop here in Holland that was used an opal Manthe. That was her shop. And but it's, what's interesting is we talk about, one of the things we talk about here in the museum is inventions and innovation. And this, the wave machine was actually invented by an African-American woman named Marjorie Joyner in 1928. So we talk about that she held the patent for this, and that this was her invention, and we have an example of it. So we can talk about those kinds of innovations, not only from Holland, but from other areas. And that actually connects with our education creative space, our Spark Lab Smithsonian
space. Let's walk in there. Smithsonian, that's pretty impressive.
Yes, we are. We are part of a network of locations across the country that is connected with the Smithsonian, and the main Spark Lab is at the American History Museum in Washington, D.C. This is our education space. It is open when the museum is open. It is for people of all ages, but we especially encourage families to come with young people because they can...
It's kind of like hands-on?
It is. It's absolutely hands-on. We have artifacts from our collection and cases, and then we have activities that encourage people to invent and create and explore and tweak those ideas. We ask them questions, but this is a chance for them to be creative and explore what it means to be an inventor. So, and everybody's an inventor.
So I can come if I bring my granddaughter?
Absolutely. Okay. You can come on your own. You don't even need to bring your granddaughter, though we'd love to see her. But no, you can come and try
it's
it
so
too.
Much fun to watch the adults play in here as well.
I see a ramp over there. What's that?
That's for a car.
We challenge them to invent vehicles. We just give them supplies. Sometimes they're Legos, but sometimes we just give them just, you know, recycled materials to invent vehicles, and then they can test it down the ramp and see how fast it goes, how far it goes, and then they can tweak their invention and see if they can make it go faster or make it go farther.
What are some of the outcomes from the Sparks STEM space?
If I could jump in here,
please,
because
do.
This was a game changer for the museum.
Game changer.
When we brought this exhibit in and we made arrangements, and we're one of the three museums in Michigan, we're one of eight museums in the country
that's progressive.
That have this license to do Spark Lab. And because we are such a rich community of invention and industry and manufacturing, as we were discussing, we were able to, and this is what the Smithsonian felt, we were able to incorporate that history as kids are learning the process of invention. So all these activities are here for kids to learn. The local companies embrace the idea because we're teaching skills that aren't being taught anymore. The Lenlinson Center, which started Spark Lab, said, "We are a country of inventors, and we don't teach the invention process."
For the next generation.
For the next generation and the generation to follow. So that is why they created Spark Lab, and that's why they created these satellite spaces. And as you can see, we also have a wall of display and exhibits, and all of those are relating to the activities that we have in the space. They are artifacts from our collection that talk about invention, innovation.
The activities,
let's walk over there so I can see it a little bit better.
Okay, so the activities in Spark Lab rotate quarterly. And so right now we have kind of a nautical theme going on. You know, how do you have lights on a ship, you know,
because
and the evolution of, yeah, the evolution of fueling those lights.
So you've got a candle up here, and then there's oil lamp, and
correct.
It's a funny thing, it looks like a spout there. You must put the oil and it burns
looks
off
like
the
a duck.
Right. Looks like a duck. I like that. Yes. And then what's this next generation of lantern?
Well, it's designed so that
it uses a lens.
Yeah, it used kerosene, and with the lens, it would magnify what you need.
Concentrates
correct.
It on an area. Then you've got one, what's this one? A battery-driven one, and then what's this last?
That's the old-fashioned one. That came from the Netherlands, so that's kind of a step back.
Now, I see something. There's so much. You said
yes.
Alabama. Well, here's the life jacket from the Alabama,
right.
Which is one of those cruise ships that used to come to Lake Mackatawa in here in Holland.
Right. And it's kind of unique. During World War II, life jackets prior had been filled with a material from Japan. Well, some kind of a material.
Yeah.
And it wasn't available anymore. So a scientist here discovered through invention and experimentation that milkweed was the solution. So Michiganders and people on the East Coast started picking milkweeds, sending it to Petoskey, Michigan,
okay.
where it was the only processing plant. And they processed that to make the life jackets that saved our World War II.
You know, I think my grandfather had me wearing those on the boat from one time.
Yes, yes.
Well, I tell you what, there's more and more. It talks about the history of boats, but there's a whole museum to look to.
Yes,
we better keep moving, folks. Okay. We're out of the Sparks Lab, and you guys got to come visit. What are these two funny-looking Indian?
Well, you know, the heritage of the museum is Dutch, and the Dutch West Indies was part of the province. And so during different world's fairs and exhibitions, they had displays. Well, during at 1939, this ties into the clock, the New York World's Fair was going on.
Yes.
But the Netherlands exhibit was afraid to bring their things back home.
Okay.
You know, because of invasion. So they donated them to us, and Michelle's going
to
talk
about
that.
Tom, we'd love to run the clock for you, because this is a very special piece.
Yes. This looks pewter-like.
So this is from the World's Fair.
It's cast
bronze. It has all kinds of different figures, so it looks like sort of a layered cake in a way. many layers. There are seven layers. The queen.
5 feet high.
Yeah, the queen is at the top.
Okay.
And then.
Okay.
Yes, Queen Wilhelmina, and then it goes down from her state council, ministers, Supreme Court, the different chambers, houses of parliament, and then provincial. The Netherlands is divided into different provinces, and
right.
They all have different names and different flags, but they're all under one country, and then and one queen. And then at the bottom are, you know, your regular people. So we have members of the military and security forces, and then we have tradespeople and farmers, and there's an artist.
There's a blacksmith hammering away.
Looks like a school teacher or something way over there.
Yes, so the clock, and it does have timing, used to keep time.
We don't know if the name is originally the clock. That's what we have been calling it for several decades. So we don't know if that was what it was called originally.
But it does play the Dutch national anthem.
Okay.
Let's hear that.
So now the music's playing, but on the very bottom, the different figures are moving throughout the building. And this is all made out of bronze. So they're rotating around and going in and out of the building. And then eventually, the top will also start to turn. So we run this on the first Saturday of every month at noon. So any visitor in the museum here at that time can watch it go.
So the various layers, some are going clockwise and some are going counterclockwise as they progress up vertically. We're up to the ministers at this moment. And then.
And Tom, this was recently restored for a while. It wasn't able to run. And the reason we only run it once a month is because it wasn't designed for regular use. It was for a World's Fair exhibit. That's a temporary exhibit. And here we have it this many decades later, and we can celebrate it. So we do it very gently.
Yes, sparingly. Well, I see the Holland Furnace Company. What's the story behind that?
Another large industry in Holland, and that is part of their parade float. They actually were so big that the city helped raise funds to build the Warm Friends Hotel in town so that when their business folks came in, their customers, they had some place to stay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, we're just completing this. I see a little carousel here. There's something special.
This was actually carved, hand carved by a sailor from the Netherlands.
It's about 3 or 4 feet wide, and it literally looks like an old-fashioned carousel with different seats on it, different carriages.
Carved animals, all horses. So I guess that would make it a merry-go-round.
Yes, there you go.
Because a carousel has different animals. A merry-go-round has all horses.
I'm glad you clarified that. I came to the museum.
Gee, I just learned something. Okay.
even taught the museum.
I did not know that.
Well, wonderful. We're going to be going on. What's the next?
The next space we're going to go in really briefly is in our temporary exhibit space, because Michelle can talk to you about our current exhibit and also ideas of what else we do in this rotating exhibit space.
And we just passed through, you heard the sound change, is the gift shop.
Yes, don't miss the gift shop.
What is a museum without a gift shop?
Exactly.
We always have to have one of those. So we have a temporary exhibit space. We talked about permanent exhibits, and we talked about temporary exhibits. So we do have a temporary space called our Focus Gallery. right now, we rotate between having exhibitions that feature our permanent collection.
Your archives.
Our archives, exactly. We have
the
over...
things that we don't normally get to see.
Exactly. That's the same way with all museums. Right. We all have so many things, we can't show them all.
You don't have enough space.
The we Holland have Museum over has 100,000 items in our collection.
No way.
Yes.
Where do you put them?
Well, we have a big storage area.
We do have storage areas. So they're not on display very often, and when we bring them out, they're a treat for us as well as the community.
Exactly. So we love to show the things that we can't show all the time. So recently we've had an exhibition of folk art from our collection. And one of the things we wanted to do with this exhibition called Storied Objects is to talk about the fact that these objects all have stories. And the idea that folk art crosses all cultures. So that is not just a United States thing. It's not just an American thing. You can find folk art from everywhere. Made from the materials that are available to the people and the cultures that are there. So we have, in this example, in this exhibit, we had Oaxacan clay sculptures. We had quilts. We had an Indonesian shadow puppet. And we had baskets from areas like the Philippines, Venezuela, Indonesia. So we had baskets as well as the Netherlands, baskets from all over the world. And we talked about different basket weaving techniques. Artifacts are some of our best primary source documents in terms of talking about history, what it was like then, who lived there, their experiences. Those objects are so important to tell those stories. We are so excited. We also have traveling exhibits come to Holland here, and we have one. It's called Cultivating the Dutch Tradition in the 21st Century, Jane Jones Hyperrealist Floral Painting. So it's a very long title for a show of 25 original still life paintings. And if you're not familiar with still lifes are paintings of objects, so flowers, fruit. And this particular artist, Jane Jones, she's from Colorado, she paints floral paintings. And she has a degree in art history. She also has a degree in biology. So she really looks at nature with a scientific eye, but she's also very influenced by 17th century Dutch still life, which was one of the major art genres from the Netherlands in the 17th century. And her works are beautiful. It's going to be, it's a large exhibit. It will fill our entire temporary gallery, but also our lobby. It opens May 5th, and it will be here until July 3rd. So we encourage people to come and see it because it's absolutely, her work is gorgeous.
Awesome. And so two or three times a year, you have either internal exhibits or you bring in national. Ricky, it's so wonderful, but time is passing so quickly.
It is, and we have other places to go
we
and
do.
Things to see. So Tom, I do want to just share that one of the things that we are doing during that exhibit, the temporary exhibit that Michelle talked about, the floral paintings, is we are going to have another type of interaction in this gallery with some of our still life and talking about the aspects of still life and how they impact the Dutch artists at the time and how they are impacting this contemporary artist that we're getting this lovely collection from.
Yeah, so we'll be able to talk a little bit about science and nature, the symbols behind still life paintings, because those symbols are very important to the artist Jane Jones, who will be here. But we also will be talking about how it interacts with the economy and the economics of 17th century Dutch life, but also the fact that still life was a topic, a subject matter that was deemed appropriate for women artists, and there were a couple of very important Dutch women artists. So we'll be talking a little bit about those artists as well. So we're gonna be able to make a connection with our galleries and our objects with Jane Jones's works downstairs.
Now, Ricky, it seems like to me that not only is this a museum, a history museum, but I also feel it's almost like an art museum.
Oh, totally, it is both. It is a little of both and a lot of both at the same time.
Well, I wanna thank you for such a wonderful visit, and I'm sure glad that this history is here. I'm Tom Majeure with Strong Tower Radio. My co-host has been Ricky Levine. Ricky, thank you. What a wonderful tour.
Oh, it's been our pleasure, Tom. So glad you could join us.
And want to thank Michelle.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And Debbie is off on another mission. But I'm Tom Majeure for Strong Tower Radio. Until next time, bye now.